This episode is brought to you by Chiefs on Broadway. There's a different way to experience live music in Nashville. Eric Church's Chiefs on Broadway is home to the Neon Steeple, an intimate live music venue in the heart of downtown Nashville, where artists and songwriters take the stage for up-close, unforgettable shows. From stripped-down sets to surprise guests, no two nights are the same. Check out the Neon Steeple lineup and get your tickets now at chiefsonbroadway.com.
Hello, and welcome to Folk Files, a folk music history podcast that takes a comb to the snarled and matted history of traditional folk songs from all over the English-speaking world and occasionally beyond. A couple months ago, I talked about the ballad The Two Sisters. It's only appropriate, then, for cosmic balance, that we discuss The Two Brothers, which is currently playing in the background, sung by Lizzie Higgins. The Two Brothers is also known as Twa Brothers, Two Little Schoolboys, The Rolling of the Stone, Two Pretty Boys, and many other names. Or, to make it easier to categorize, it's the 49th child ballad and number 38 in the Roud Folk Song Index. Unlike The Two Sisters, which, in most versions, has a pretty straightforward plot with a motive and a murder, and sometimes even paranormal revenge, The Two Brothers is frustratingly vague. Who are these brothers? Why did one of them kill the other? Which one of them killed the other? Over the course of this episode, we'll explore the murky answers to these questions, discover how the ballad survived for so long, and discuss the many different endings of the song. Along the way, we'll learn about the importance of nomadic groups to the folk process and discover the surprising ways in which this ballad tugs at one's heartstrings. Here's what's consistent in essentially every version of the song. Two brothers have a discussion, usually about some sort of sporting activity, like playing ball or throwing stones. Then, one brother kills the other brother. So, to begin, who are these brothers? As you might guess from a few of the titles, like Two Pretty Boys and The Little Schoolboys, sometimes they're described as young children. Texas Gladden, who has one of the earliest recorded versions of the song, was interviewed about the ballad and talked about how she imagined the main characters as little boys.
It's a sad story. I could see these little boys as they walked out and one would ask the other if he could play ball or roll a marble stone. Then I can see him when he draws his tomahawk and hacks him across the breast. I can even see where he carries him and digs a hole and puts him in everything. Just a perfect picture.
Here's her singing.
Oh, brother, can you play ball or roll a marble stone? No, brother, no, brother, I can't play ball.
It is especially common in American versions of the song for the boys to be very young. But that's not always the case. Sometimes, at least one of the boys is old enough to have a sweetheart. And sometimes, one of them is at least old enough to own a sword. Who knows which of those milestones comes first? As A.L. Lloyd says about the ballad, tracing its sundry versions, we find that it concerns not merely a violent bit of schoolboy horseplay, but a murderous quarrel over a patch of land. There's more to that quote, but I'll get into that later. The two boys have relevantly consistent names, which is surprising given their lack of other clear qualities. They are usually William and John. In the version that Texas Gladden sings, one boy hacks his brother in the chest with a tomahawk and then says, "Now, brother, I reckon you can't play ball nor roll a marble stone," which seems like an odd bit of dark humor from a schoolboy. It also indicates that the act of violence was deliberate. But that's not always the case. There are plenty of versions, especially in Scotland, where the brother's death is an accident. In most of those versions, the boys begin to wrestle, and then a knife slips out of one's pocket, delivering a deadly wound to the other. Here's Belle Stewart's version, which features an accidental death.
So when they came to yon merry green woods, beneath the spreading moon, the little penknife slipped out of William's pocket, which gave John his deadly wound, which gave John his deadly wound.
But in other similar versions, the brother just whips out his penknife and stabs the other guy. And there is, of course, speculation about whether the accidental deaths are truly accidents, considering the second half of the song, when the dying brother starts coaching the other brother on what he should say to the rest of the family. The very last verse of Belle Stewart's version reads, "But what will I tell to your stepmother dear this night when I go home? You can tell her I'm dead and in grave laid, for she prayed I might never come home, for she prayed I might never come home." Some people have found this verse very suspicious. Is this one of those instances where it's an evil stepmother and she's somehow plotted the death of her stepson using her own son as a pawn? Did she plant a knife in her biological son's pocket, somehow knowing it would fall out and kill his half-brother? In versions where one brother deliberately stabs the other, does the stepmother put him up to it? Multiple people in the folk sphere have suggested this might be the case, including Jordy McIntyre, who writes, "The unusual conclusion of blaming the stepmother for the event has strong echoes of the common mother curse motif." Silly Wizard, in his album notes, also suggests it's the obvious conclusion, writing, "With his dying breath, he curses his stepmother who, he realizes, is responsible for plotting his death." I'm not sure if I'm as certain about that conclusion. But if not to appease his stepmother, why does one brother kill the other? Is he just really angry that the other brother is beating him at wrestling? Or angry that his brother won't throw stones or play marbles with him? There are some versions where an element of jealousy is hinted at, but never really confirmed in any satisfactory way. Here's a little bit of Rolling of the Stone by Oscar Brand.
Oh, will you go to the rolling of the stones, tossing of the ball? Or will you go and see pretty Susie dance among them all? I will go to the rolling of the stones, the tossing of the ball. And I will go and see pretty Susie dance among them all.
As an aside, I think it's interesting that there are so many sets of lyrics where Susie is given a name, but neither of the brothers is. This is refreshing, since there are so many folk songs out there where the woman is just the wife or the daughter. In Rolling of the Stone, one brother kills the other after he confirms that he's going to go see Pretty Susie. So, I can imagine this scenario. One brother asks, "When I leave, are you going to go hang out with my sweetheart?" And the other one says, "Yep, once you're out of sight, I'm going to go spend some quality time with your sweetheart." I can imagine a fight breaking out over that kind of audacity, leading to a deadly wound. But that's not what happens. If you look at the lyrics of Rolling of the Stone carefully, the man who is killed is Susie's sweetheart. So, in theory, the man who answers that yes, he will go see Susie, is Susie's lover and has every right to spend time with her. There are lots of possible explanations, like maybe Susie was dating one brother but actually in love with the other, but it's just very messy and unclear. There's similar messiness in versions without Susie. To return to Belle Stewart's version, the first verse reads, "Says William to John, can you throw a stone?" And then the second verse reads, "Says William to John, I cannot throw a stone." What? Why is William answering his own question? At first, I thought it was a typo. But Belle Stewart's daughter sings it the same way, as you can hear.
Said William T. John, can you throw a stone? Or can you play at a ball? Or can you play at a ball? Said William T. John, I cannot throw a stone. Nor little can I play at a ball. But if you come down to yon merry green wood,
I'll try you a wrestling fall. I'll try you a wrestling fall.
I love Oscar Brand's quote describing the confusion of the plot. He says, although many verses of The Rolling of the Stones are missing, somebody killed somebody, and it's a very lovely song. But could there be a reason for the song's moments of incoherence? As you'll see, my research eventually led me to a pretty sinister hypothesis. It could be that the song's confusing because it's supposed to be metaphorical. In Where is St. George? Pagan Imagery in English Folk Song, Bob Stewart writes, a clear link connects this ballad with the early ritual practice of the sacred king and his Tanist brother and successor. Although actual practices in specific times and places are known to have varied enormously, the general pattern was this. At a certain time of the year, one chosen man superseded the present king, usually by killing him. I'm not sure how much I buy into Bob Stewart's theory, because there aren't specific features about the song that are shared by enough versions that would indicate that this was about the death of the sacred king and time passing and the seasons. You could just as easily say that this song is based on the story of Peleus and Telamon of Greek myth, and some folklorists have. Peleus and Telamon both killed their half-brother, possibly during a hunting trip or a game, and then tried to claim it was an accident. Their father discovered the truth and banished the two brothers. It's interesting that, like in the song, the death happens during some sort of playful sporting activity. But other than that, there aren't many similarities. After all, there are three brothers in the myth, and in the song, no one is banished. Parallels have been drawn between the ballad and the story of Cain and Abel. In the Bible, God accepts Abel's sacrifice, but not Cain's, and so Cain becomes jealous, lures Abel out into the field, and then kills him. But there doesn't seem to be much Christian imagery in the two brothers' song. And importantly, Cain lies to God. When God asks him where Abel is, he responds, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? In most versions of Two Brothers, the murdering brother tells the truth, to at least one person. There are a few exceptions where the murderer tries to lie, but a lot of folklorists think that those versions have borrowed parts from a different ballad called Edward. In Edward, the murderer at first tries to lie, claiming the blood on his person is from a hawk or a hound. Here's a little bit of Edward by Gene Ritchie.
Came that blood on your shirt sleeve? Oh, dear love, tell me. Well, it is the blood of the old gray mare that plowed the fields for me, me, me. That plowed the fields for me. It does look too pale for the old gray mare that plowed the fields for thee, thee, thee. That plowed the fields for thee.
In some versions of Edward, also known as My Son David or Henry, the man has killed his brother, sometimes for reasons as similarly bizarre as those in Two Brothers, like that his brother didn't want to go riding with him. But there are other, more sinister versions. You might remember that I've talked about Edward in another episode of Folk Files, the Women Without Choices episode, where I discuss incest ballads. And this is where the other half of that A.L. Lloyd quote comes into play. After mentioning versions of Two Brothers where the quarrel is over a piece of land, he says, in the oldest versions of all, we find that the root of the dispute is in incestuous jealousy, with both brothers enamored of their sister. Now, to be clear, I could not find those oldest versions that A.L. Lloyd was talking about, even among all the texts that Francis Child collected. And it seems like he may have been jumping the gun or simply confusing Two Brothers with Edward, a common mistake. The main argument for the incest motive seems to come from the folk music scholar Phillips Barry, whose entire argument relies on his assertion that Trois Brothers, Edward, and Lizzie Wan, a ballad that is obviously about incest, all descended from the same ancestor ballad. But that's not certain, so it seems very tentative. There is a specific line that Phillips Barry points to when discussing the incest theory, but it's not an obvious admission of incest. The line in question is "breaking of a little bush that might have been a tree." When Cecil Sharp collected Edward, a singer told him that that line was a kenning, basically a figure of speech, that referred to a little girl. While that makes sense metaphorically, it seems like that's basically all we have to go on. And that line suggests that the brother is a pedophile, not that he committed incest. And keep in mind, the line only occurs in versions of two brothers that seem to have merged into the Edward ballad. There are some versions of the Edward ballad that make it clear that incest occurred, but they seem to be all modern rewrites, like in the case of Fay Heald's version called Henry.
Oh, what is the blood on his shirt sleeve? Oh, my son Henry, please tell them to me. It's the blood of his sister Dee. She would have my baby.
Here, the brother finally admits that he's killed his sister because she was going to have his baby. The most compelling argument that I found for the incest motif, which still isn't that convincing, comes from Tristram P. Coffin's article, The Murder Motive in Edward. Coffin explains, "Incest is a motif that has consistently tended to drop out of ballad plots to be modified and rationalized into something less sordid, less specific." Coffin says that there are multiple ballads that Child collected with incestuous themes that have lost those themes in the less than 200 years since Child wrote them down. So the argument is that when a ballad is very vague and seems to be missing something, like Two Brothers, the answer might be that there used to be a taboo subject that was erased for the sake of propriety. So, in the original Two Brothers, whatever that might have been, did one brother kill the other because he was having impure thoughts about their sister? Frustratingly, there's really no way to know. We just have the versions that exist now, and there isn't incest in any of those, except for a couple that have been fused with an Edward ballad. Now let's turn to the matter of those versions that exist today. Where did they come from, and how did they survive? It seems that most of the earliest versions, like with Twa Sisters, come from Scotland. There have been some arguments that the song is based on an incident from 1589 in Drum, Scotland, when William Somerville accidentally shot his brother John while cleaning his pistol. But aside from the names, William and John, two extremely common names, and the fact that one brother killed another, there is no connection between the unfortunate tale and the ballad. So the ballad originally existed in Scotland, and then it obviously was brought to the United States since there are so many American versions. But many people thought that the song died out in Scotland. In the late 1800s, Francis Child wrote, "All the Scottish versions were obtained within the first third of this century, and since then, no others have been heard of." Folk collectors couldn't find the ballad. Even thorough Scottish collectors like Gavin Greig and Reverend Duncan of Linturk were unsuccessful in trying to find it. And that's because they weren't looking in the right place. They were completely ignoring an incredibly rich source of folk music, nomadic communities. As folk music expert Hamish Henderson, who did manage to collect the song, writes, "Few could have expected us to land as many versions as we did in the mid-50s. The reason appears to be a social one. Practically all Grieg's informants came from the farmer or farm servant section of the community. Practically none came from among the traveling folk, the tinkers or tinkler gypsies, who have proved such an invaluable folklore source in the last 20 years or so." Many of the singers that I've played so far, Lizzie Higgins, Belle Stewart, Sheila McGregor, are Scottish travelers. Here's another version from a traveler, Jeannie Robertson, who happens to be Lizzie Higgins' mother.
He's washed the blood free of
Let's take a moment to talk about nomadic communities in the British Isles. There is an umbrella term in the UK, GRT, which stands for Gypsy, Roma, and Traveller, and encompasses many of the ethnic groups associated with itinerant lifestyles. It is important to note that Gypsy is a complex term that in many circumstances is now a slur. In 1971, the World Romani Congress voted not to recognize the word Gypsy as a description of their culture. However, there are nomadic groups that do use the word as an identifier, and so some institutions still use the term. For example, the English Folk Dance and Song Society has an archive of Gypsy and Traveller voices, a term that they have adopted after careful discussion with the appropriate communities, including Romani Gypsy Dr. Joe Clement of Northumbria University, who helped create the collection. But unless you've carefully researched the term or belong to a community that claims it, it's probably wise not to use the word Gypsy. Scottish Travellers, capital T, are a non-Romani ethnic group traditionally associated with traveling. While many formerly nomadic people now reside in permanent homes, at the time when Grieg was failing to find versions of Two Brothers, the travelers were probably moving around Scotland, learning songs, and bringing them from place to place. Travelers are essentially a catalyst for the folk process. As Peter Hall explains, none are better placed than the members of the traveling community to act as distributors. We know that now, and since the folk music revival of the 1950s and 60s, many scholars now know to seek out GRT people when collecting songs. But in the early 20th century, no one thought to contact them, so some songs, like Twa Brothers, were considered lost.
It's two pretty boys, they were going to the school. In the evening, coming home, said the biggest boy to the littlest boy, oh, can you throw a stone? Oh, can you throw a stone?
That was a version from Lucy Stewart, also a traveler, but not related to Belle Stewart, who we heard earlier. The final thing I'd like to talk about, to return to the plot of the ballad, is the two major endings that we see. One could argue that there are three if we include the Edward variations where the brother lies about the blood on his shirt, but I'll skip over those since we already chatted about Edward. In most standard versions, the second half of the ballad is concerned with what the remaining brother will tell his family after burying the dying brother. I find that there's something very human and almost sweetly sentimental about this discussion between the two brothers. Even though one of them is actively bleeding out, they're running through a list of their loved ones and deciding what is best for each of them to hear. You can hear a little of their conversation in Alistair Roberts' version.
Oh, what shall I tell you? This night when I go, you can tell him I'm away to a London school. I'm the good scholar, I'll come home, I'm the good scholar.
In this version, the little brother will be told that his brother has gone off to school to become a scholar. The little sister will be told that he's running in the fields with his schoolbooks. Often, the father is told the truth. Perhaps he can handle it. Thankfully, the sweetheart Susie is usually also told the truth. She deserves it. There's just something so heart-wrenching about a man or boy's final thoughts being about how to break the news of his death to his family. In my opinion, this is where the true value of the song can be found, and it might be why the song has survived so long. Back to Susie. The other common ending for the song is witchcraft. In some versions, especially those called The Rolling of the Stone or The Rolling of the Stones, Susie reacts to her sweetheart's death by going to his graveside, working her magic, and bringing him back to life. Here's my band, Music the Gathering's version. By the way, a tablet is a wooden grave marker, not an iPad.
Gypsy Susie, she came wandering by with a tablet under her arm, until she came to her true love's grave. She began her charm. She charmed the fish from out the sea, the birds from out their nest. She charmed her true love out of his grave, where he was intent to rest.
Any of you who are very familiar with the child ballads, however, might recognize this ending. The corpse speaks, asking what Susie wants from him. She answers that she just wants a kiss from his cold clay lips. It's the same as the song known as the Unquiet Grave. So like with Edward, it seems like some singers decided to fuse two ballads together. There are some scholars who claim that The Rolling of the Stone should not be considered a version of Two Brothers because of these differences. I'm not sure where I personally stand on this. I can see why they are categorized under the same number, since both songs have a discussion about recreation and then one brother kills the other, but I can also see their stark differences. If you have a strong opinion, I'd love to hear it. Send me a message at folkfilespodcast@gmail.com or send a direct message on social media at folkfilespodcast. That's also where you can reach me if you have any corrections or questions. Each month, I've been highlighting a specific folk resource, including festivals, folk sings, and podcasts. A couple months ago, folklorist and vocalist Derek Peter reached out to me to let me know about his Fieldwork Archive, an amazing collection of source recordings. You can search through this resource by song title, singer, and geographic or thematic tags, or you could click Hear a Random Recording and maybe learn a new song. While there are no recordings of Two Brothers, there are a ton of examples of other songs that have been featured on Folk Files. I've linked to the Fieldwork Archive in my episode notes. A big thank you to Derek for this amazing resource. If any of you have a resource that you'd like me to highlight in a coming episode, send me a message. Folk Files is now an official member of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network, which I'm really excited about. None of my episodes are going to change. I'll still be talking about whatever songs or themes interest me or are recommended by listeners. But now I'm connected to an amazing community of other folk music lovers and history buffs. You may have heard some promotions at the start of this episode. That's new too, but luckily I get to handpick what you hear, so it should all be information about other Bluegrass Situation podcasts, small businesses, and good causes. I highly recommend checking out the other podcasts in the BGS network. We're coming up on the second anniversary of the death of Heather Wood, a member of folk revival group The Young Tradition and an absolute inspiration to many in the folk music community, including myself. She was a pillar of Exceedingly Good Song Night, which I've mentioned on this podcast multiple times. While her voice is currently resounding at the fantastic party that she believed greets us all after death, I'd like to end this episode with her short but bewitching version of The Rolling of the Stones. Thanks for listening.